Jeff Ferrari, Lyon. Her topic today will be using the standards development process to promote health system strengthening, global monitoring, and disease surveillance. Just again, a few highlights from her extensive bio here. She's a consultant to Jambi South Africa. Jambi is a non-profit organization leading the project of e-health architecture for Rwanda and Mozambique, responsible for the health standards infrastructure. She's a consultant at the Department of Management and Health Education at the Ministry of Health, Brazil. And a contract for a project of strengthening safe hospitals and clinics in HIV activity.
Thank you very much. It's really a pleasure to be here. I would like first to thank the organizers. I have been at the Seattle meeting a few years ago, and I'm very happy to see more international sessions at this conference, and I really would like to see one day an international public health conference, because I think this is a topic that many of us would like to see discussed on a global environment. It's difficult to talk after John and Patrick. I would like to detail a little bit more. So what do I do to?
You're okay.
So why we are doing all this work at ISO? Because after the Bellagio meeting in 2008, we clearly understood that the vast majority of resource-impoverished countries, they either do not have a national e-health policy, but they do have several vertical health information systems based on diseases. And they have to accept those systems. A country like Mozambique spends $3 a year per citizen for health care. Someone comes with a program like that and says, I'm going to give you another $2 a year per citizen. What would you do if you were the Minister of Health? You would say yes. So this makes a burden on those countries. While Patrick was showing the indicators, I just want to mention that at the point of care in Mozambique, there are 21 different forms of data to be collected. There are no physicians, and that poor technician that is there has to fill that data. Of those 21 forms, maybe 9 or 10 of them are collecting data on MDG 4 and 5 with slight different denominators. So it's really awful, and we are doing that. Of course, those countries also don't have proper human resources on health informatics. They cannot access the standards we are developing, either at ISO, HL7, CDISC, whatever. And they do not understand the complexity of creating this national e-health infrastructure. So it is urgent. We cannot afford to let those countries with not so many resources with all those duplicative activities. And those global South countries, they need this architectural framework from which to conceive e-health systems that can be robust, scalable, and make proper decisions on how to acquire and construct this national e-health strategy. So which standards? Everybody needs, not only low-income countries. Models, frameworks, and architecture, interoperability, terminologies, and security, of course. This is a key issue. So our domain is very complex, and all of you know that. The vertical systems, they are a problem, and Patrick has shown that. I love that slide with all those different booklets. And no one talks. We have to lower cost and increase quality, and this is now a problem all over. And we need an international surveillance and monitoring system. If something happens now in South America, how long would it take for us to know up here and really act? We have used Google to find out where the last influenza was, isn't it? So John already showed what ISO TC 215 is, but I think it's important to mention that public health and surveillance was included on the scope of the committee thanks to the work that both John and Patrick helped to assemble at Working Group 8. So now the scope of the committee also addresses public health and surveillance. There are 89 ISO published standards, and trust me, they are useful. So there are 30 participating countries and 23 observing countries. The only difference is that participating countries have to vote. The question and the issue is most of the participating countries are on the Northern Hemisphere, are very well developed, with the exception of Kenya is here, Brazil is here, and I think we have Zimbabwe now. Not yet. Zimbabwe is here on the observing country list. We have to move these countries from here to here. And we need resources, we need funding, we need sponsorship. ISO does not pay for anyone to go to their meetings. It's up to the national member body to sponsor. The national member body, at least in my country, does not sponsor anyone. Everyone has to go based on their own organization or paying by themselves. So it is a voluntary work. That's the first thing. There are 9 groups, as John already mentioned. Those are the core groups, and we are now at the moment changing this structure. There are several liaisons with, and this is the Joint Initiative Council that gathers all other SDOs. But we deal with frameworks, with interoperability terminologies, and so on. The JIC is today the place that guarantees that HL7 and CDISC, or either the European ISO committee, is not going to develop the same standard. So we're going to do it in an harmonized way. So this is a very interesting forum. So before we start anything, everything has to pass by the JIC. There are several liaisons with EMEA, with SNOMED, with the European community, with the European ISO community. Oh. Okay, so what is the advantage? ISO standards, they use a precise process, trust me. It can be very boring, it can take up to 2 years to develop a standard, but it's a very defined process and a very open process. ISO produces other deliverables, not only standards. It produces technical specifications, technical reference documents like the ones on e-health architecture. We wanted them to be published as quick as possible, so we made them only technical reference. And the other thing that is very important, John mentioned as well, it is a multi-stakeholder. We have to have neutral that are governments, universities, associations, consumers. Who is going to consume the standards we are doing? Hospitals, clinics, so those would be here, HMOs, whatever, and producers, vendors. And for an ISO standard to be approved in all national bodies and at the ISO community, this has to be voted on that. So a standard passes from all these stages, from the proposal to the publication stage. Since the proposal stage, it has to be approved and balloted between all the countries. So you cannot say, I'm going to invent a new ISO standard. You cannot do that. You have to make a Form 4, say what your standard or document is going to be, and this is balloted for all the countries that vote. And not only vote, they have to say they want a standard and they have to indicate an expert. And if you don't have more than 75% of yes and at least 5 countries indicating experts, it's a no-go. So this is a method that really reflects what the international community thinks is needed for a standard. And those are the steps. I'm not going to bore you here, but it takes a while, and everything is balloted, and you have to address all the comments, line by line. No ISO standard is published without commenting that document that is the disposition of comment. All of them have to be addressed and discussed at the plenary session of the working group, and then this passes as a resolution. So the method is really very, very precise. HL7 uses a similar method. I don't want you to get bored reading this. There are 90 standards, but just quickly, there are standards on how to build a data warehouse. There are standards on how to identify a provider. There are standards that describe what is a health indicator. There are a three-part standard, a brilliant standard on the health informatics service architecture, the HISA standard. This comes from the SAN community in Europe. How do you identify a person? What is the electronic health record scope, definition, and context? How do you create terminologies? What is the common glossary for all the terms we use? And Andrew, can you raise your hand, please? From Sherbrooke University, he built the common glossary tool. He's going to present this later today on the poster session. It should be a paper session, because then he could show it online. And a bunch of standards on security. So we are talking more here on that standard, that document on the capacity-based e-health architecture, on the framework for national health information systems. Those are the standards related for public health at the moment. And this framework is the HMN framework, for those who are familiar with that. And the knowledge management of health information standards that Andrew from Sherbrooke University, Canada, a delegate from Canada, has written and has built the tool for that. So the e-health architecture is led by Brazil and WHO. We had experts from all over: Australia, Brazil, Canada, Holland, Italy, Kenya, New Zealand, Rwanda. He was an invited expert. South Africa, Sweden, and USA. John is one of the experts that is giving a fantastic contribution. I am very happy to inform that part one of this document, that is an overview of national e-health initiatives. It doesn't want to be comprehensive, but we just showed on this document what countries are doing. And we have the reports from Australia, Brazil, Canada, India, and Kenya. This has just passed the last ballot. We have a small disposition of comments. So this will be published very, very soon at ISO, and we want to make it open, free access for everybody. Based on the reports and the meetings we had, it was clear for us that different countries are at different levels. So we introduced a maturity model. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that pretty soon. Part two is the core contribution. That's the one John is giving the contribution, because it provides a guide to best practice, business requirements, and principles for countries and their subordinate health authorities planning to use the information and communication technology to support healthcare delivery. So it's a business reference architecture in terms of its components and capabilities. So a minister of health can look at that and say, well, I don't want data mining, I don't want electronic health record, but I want monitoring and evaluation, and I want primary care. So if I look at this enterprise view, what pieces do I want and how do I put them together? So that's what we are doing. Of course, we have used the HISA document as a reference, the Health Informatics Service Oriented Architecture. And if you compare to that document, we address the enterprise view and the information view. We don't go to the computational and technology level. So we stay at the business requirement level. The HMN framework has been used as a major source for defining the content. So this is our house. This is our enterprise view of an e-health architecture. And I must tell you, this drawing came from Rwanda. On the Rwanda e-health policy document, you're going to find a very similar house. And I'm very grateful to Dr. Richard Gakuba, that is the e-health coordinator from Rwanda, because he was the first one who crafted this house. We made it a little bit larger, we put a ceiling, and we put this piece here that is really essential. The foundation, Those are the building blocks of any e-health architecture, no matter which domains, and you cannot read it, but that's okay. The domains are in blue here. They represent the different things you might want in your country. So community-based services, primary care, hospital, public health disease and surveillance, emergency response, diagnostic services, pharmacy, healthcare, supply chain. One would say, ah, but this is not part of health informatics. For low-income countries, this has to be because there is no other system there taking care of stocking. So this has to be addressed here. Human resources in health, also someone would say, well, this is outside. No, this is inside because there is no other one taking care. Health finance, vital records, environmental monitoring, and knowledge management and learning. So his planning, monitoring, and evaluation cross-cuts all the domains. So, but no matter which domain you want, whenever you go to any minister of health, they're going to talk about those domains. If they don't have this foundation, you cannot build a house. So those are the building blocks and the business requirements we are describing for each of those boxes. For the infrastructure, what is necessary regarding business requirements to build an electronic health record repository? Many of those countries are not going to go there. Many countries are going there, like Canada, Australia, England, and so on. So what are the business requirements for that? Identification registries and directories. So this is a forbidden word, but you need to uniquely identify persons, healthcare professionals, and providers. You might do that on a region, you might do that on a district. Whatever method you use, there must be a method behind the scenes to do that. So what are the requirements? What are the terminologies, ontologies, and classifications you're going to use? How are you going to map between that? Or in other words, what is the reference information model you're going to use to represent health information? And all your interoperability layer, what has to be here? To whom are you going to talk? What are the requirements? All the issues on consent, access, workflows, and so on. Who's going to have the right to access what? And then the privacy and security and the vital registration. So those building blocks, normally you don't see this separated. On the HMN framework, this was partially shown there, but I think here on our document, we made it completely clear. And also this column here. You won't be able to do any e-health strategy if you do not have governance and ownership. If you do not have the political decision, the financial, the organizational structure to host that. So we also describe the business requirements here, what is necessary in a country. So the idea here is that a minister of health would be able to understand what it takes and how complex. It's a complex drawing. I think everybody agrees with that because this is a very complex domain. So at the end of part one, we introduce this model and we introduce the maturity concept. Some countries have part of the domain, some countries have part of the infrastructure, but the ideal situation is to have the complete house. And I'm really thankful for John and Patrick, because Patrick is co-leading this, and John for the part two that really gives shape to this document, and we hope to publish it in the beginning of 2012. And the beauty is that together with this work, we are working with Andrew, and there is an interactive tool that you can explain to someone the complexity by saying, okay, if you have different data sources, they will map to one of the boxes on infrastructure here in our enterprise architectural view. And if you click here, this is the ISO standard that explains how you do that. This is not a dream. This is working online, even on an iPhone. And Andrew will be able to show you that. So that understanding of the complexity and the standards behind which of those pieces, I think it's a major contribution of several people working together. And that's the message we're trying to pass here. What we are trying to accomplish is very, very complex. We need lots of people working together on a collaborative fashion, and I think this work reflects that. Another example, if we talk of, we showed about what Patrick showed. So you have the SDMX HD standard to exchange data, and what is this in our model here? So this is one of those columns on public health and surveillance and addresses the issue of interoperability and vital registration. So then you have all the pieces together, and someone can understand what is behind the scenes and what is the knowledge and the capacity he has to build on the country. So Andrew is going to talk later on, and I hope he will be able to show on his computer the access. And that's the Health Informatics Standards Users and Develop. That's our wiki place that we now use to develop the standard and to map to the knowledge resource where you can map directly from the standards and the domains. Well, we've been working so hard on those different standards on public health that we decided at the last ISO plenary meeting that happened in May to propose, Working Group 8 proposed, the creation of a public health task force. We understand there are several standards that need to be developed. We already have a group of experts from different countries that are willing to work on that, so we proposed this task force. And I don't have to read why, because we all agree that we need those standards. But the purpose of this task force is to provide a forum for ISO delegates and invited experts to collaborate to create those standards for public health, to facilitate the exchange of information and collaboration between related experts, groups, and organizations like Global Fund, TB, GAF, World Bank, and so on. We understand the donors might even want to harmonize, but they don't have the method to do that. They don't know how to do that. We know how to do that at ISO. We've been doing that. ISO was created in 1996, and I'm lucky to be there since it was created. And it's a very boring methodology. And it took us, I think, 3 months to get on the final ISO template for publication, because if it's not every word and every paragraph as it has to be, it won't be published. But it works. Trust me, it works. And it's very nice to see all those different disposition of comments being addressed line by line. Everybody's happy at the end, and we reach a consensus on what is going to be published. So we know how to do that. If all those organizations ask ISO to harmonize what they collect now, so Mozambique won't have 21 different forms at the point of care, we could do that. We know how to do that. All those organizations would have their interest, and they will get the information they want. So our task force has to advocate for those countries that are filling those 21 different forms and are not represented in ISO. So we decided at ISO that we have to reach out. We have to build standards for those who need and understand those needs and make them a concrete reality. So we want to promote access, we want to adopt, adapt, or develop public health information standards that support and facilitate public health in low-income countries. We also would like to function as a technical advisory group for SKMT, that is the Standard Knowledge Management Tool, that not only represents ISO standards, it represents all the standards in health informatics, and to facilitate low-income countries to participate in ISO and to advise on standards adoption and ISO participation. There are several deliverables we would like to have to identify the standards, to propose access for low-income countries, propose and ensure sustainability. As I said, this is a voluntary work. We have to find funding for that. To propose methods to establish liaisons with the donors, with CDC, for instance. I would love, and I'm sure all my colleagues at ISO, we want more CDC people working with us. Because you are in all countries in Africa. I work a lot with Rwanda, Mozambique. There's a CDC office there with persons working. And to propose a strategy for low-income countries to develop their local health informatics committee to help build that capacity. So we need to increase the participation of those countries, and we have to have funding for that. We need donors to understand the work that we've been doing at ISO, what we are trying to accomplish, and to sponsor that work. And we believe the Public Health Task Force can be a place for that. Tomorrow at breakfast, we're going to talk with the work Ana Orlova is doing with the Public Health Data Consortium Standards at 7 a.m., and we believe there is a chance for us to work together there. But there are more chances. So let's work collaborative. I don't think even for USA or any other rich country, we cannot afford to do the same thing twice. We have to do it once and do it well. So the wiki Andrew is going to show, that's where you work. And by having the wiki, you have from the domain, you have a concept map view of the standard, and you can go to the knowledge tool and access the standard itself. And if it is an open standard, you can download it. If it's not, you're going to see the scope of the standard. So there is an ontology of standards behind the scene, a concept map of health informatics standards. So our capacity-based e-health architecture has health information standards on governance, on foundation, on the domains. Those are the different colors we have used on the health. And you can click here. You can either go directly to the spider, or you can come from the house drawing and click, and you would be entering here. And then on foundation and e-health infrastructure, one of the branches of our forest are the identification registries for healthcare providers and professionals. And then you can go as down as the data content, and here you would see what is the ISO or any other standard that applies and what are the parts of this document. It's really a fantastic tool that pulls everything together, so please go and see. And this is the repository where you can search and you would see the scope of that standard you click and saw on the spider. So this must be necessarily a process that is incremental and iterative. We cannot jump from here to here. And there is a maturity level to jump. So it's a quantic, we cannot do quantic jumps here. We have to understand, we have to do, evaluate, and then do the next iteration. And we have to do it together. So that's my message, and I'm sad that my convener cannot be here. She's Marion Lever from Canada, and she really sponsors this work. She's one of our experts, and I hope you will be at least wanting to cooperate with us, because we need more experts. And with standards, we hope to help people to understand that knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit, but wisdom is not putting tomatoes in a fruit salad. So that's the idea. Okay, guys, thank you very much, and we're open for questions.
Thank you. The session today has been recorded, so I will come around with the mic. If you would please use the mic for your questions today.
Hello. This is not a question. It's a comment on the fact that Beatrice kindly mentioned the tool which she showed in the last slides. I'd just like to qualify that in the sense that the aim of the tool is to link, on the one hand, the architecture, on the other hand, an ontology of standards based on those standards, which are the 87 standards which Beatrice mentioned. The actual informatics links are all in place, but the use cases that we will use to show those links are still under development. We hope that the first one will be a perinatal use case. But the concept is that given those use cases, that the people with that overall collaborative structure, that one day maybe people who are working those use cases can feed back information on how useful those standards have been, and and start to create one day perhaps a two-way dialogue between standards development and standards users.
Very good talk, Beatrice. Sean Granis from Regent Street. I'm curious. There are a variety of different standards. There's semantic, syntactic. There are process standards. There are architectural standards. There are a variety of standards. I'm curious, in these 80-some standards, can you characterize how much of the work was identifying existing standards that you would recommend versus creating new standards to add to the litany of existing standards?
Hi, Sean. Thank you for the question. So at the moment, what we designed, the enterprise architectural view, and for each box, we looked at ISO to see the standards that were already there, and there are several. So I don't think we will need, perhaps we will need to create more standards. Like, for instance, SDMX is an ISO standard, but SDMX HD is not, and we would like it to become, it is a WHO standard, but it would be nice it also to become an ISO standard. Like the summary health data, the content itself is not yet defined. So we would like to put this also as an ISO or as a bigger umbrella. You have several IHE profiles for interoperability. They are not yet an ISO standard, but they are at the IHE profile enterprise. So I think there is room for more standards to be created. But on the architectural document, we did not create any additional standard. We created the enterprise view of the architecture, and we linked to the standards that are already there. Part two is an ongoing work, and we are going to write the business requirements. Part of it is done, part is not. So when you read the business requirements, this links to the standards. And I believe at the end of the document, we will be able to tell you which standards are missing that we have to develop, because they are not yet there, not even at IHE or any or HO7 or whatever. So we will have a roadmap of the work we have to do for the next 5 years, maybe.
Thank you.
Yeah, like she says, it does identify gaps and also priorities, this model, not only for development of standards, but for your development of your health system. Well, we've been discussing creating indicators or other metrics associated with the components in that framework to have a common view across countries of where they are in their health system strengthening efforts. But again, the SDMX was a good example of taking a standard that wasn't really well known or known at all, really, in the health community, and using it, adapting it for public health. So we're not interested in inventing standards if unless we have to, and certainly would like to have any standards out there that are wide use, make them ISO standards, because that just makes them stronger. Because they have to go through the vetting process that Beatrice described, which is rigorous, and it eliminates it can move a standard from an organizational standard to an international standard, which is what we're trying to do.
Yeah, and I believe that if you make something an ISO standard, that's good for everybody, because even for vendors that are distributing systems all over many countries, they adopt an ISO standard as a mandate. So if you have an ISO standard, then if you use that, you're okay. You don't have to change everything as you move from one country to the other. So it's good for the market as well.
Anyone else?
Hi. My question is, do you have some agreement with the donors for using international standards? For example, I didn't see PEPFAR in the list. So how do you encourage donors to use those standards in their programs? And the second question is, are that some of these standards are available for free?
Yeah.
Because if you go on the ISO website, usually you have to pay to download the standards.
Go ahead.
Well, I think interoperability is a priority for everyone. So it's not difficult to encourage people to use standards. I personally would like to see some of the grants have written into them the use of international standards to help promote interoperability. But the issue of open standards is one that we're struggling with now, because having to purchase these standards from ISO is an obstacle to low-income countries, or even high-income countries if you don't have access to a organizational credit card. I think that will change. We see software development changing that way a bit, where people give away the software and sell the services. It could happen in standards development as well. Either that, or it gets subsidized like SNOMED has, as global intellectual property that it's in everyone's interest to make freely available. So there are discussions taking place, and there'll be a meeting. There have been meetings already, but there'll be another meeting in September with the donors to try to not change the business model of the SDOs necessarily, but to find a way of financing a subset of these standards to make them freely available to low-income countries. That's recognized as an issue, but I don't see it as insurmountable. It's just a question of financing.
Yeah, we believe that this meeting with the JIC, EMEA, donors, WHO, we will be able to come out with a business model for that. There is already a resolution from TC215 saying that national member bodies should work on that and come up with a business model. At least in Brazil, the way our association works is that the government can make a partnership with the standards organization, and they did that for the Ministry of Tourism. So all the ISO standards, we will have the World Cup and the Olympic Games, so they had to improve the services in tourism. So it was a strategic decision from the country. They are all open and free. So if you sponsor governments on low-income countries, or if you do this by an umbrella organization, you can do that. So from that 90 list of standards, perhaps 30 of them we have from the e-health architecture enterprise view, though we picked up at least 30. So we recognize that there are 30 standards that should be opened as quick as possible. We would love to have a formal agreement with the donors.
I just want to add one other comment, and that is that I think that we're at a critical juncture. We know that we have rapidly declining budgets for health and public health ahead, the global economic crisis, and some of the factors I laid out in my presentation at the beginning about the public health challenges that lie ahead with rapid population growth and environmental issues, et cetera. Well, what we're working on here is comprehensive planning, comprehensive guidance, a roadmap that can be useful for harmonizing information systems, health information systems development globally, that links to the standards to be used that foster that interoperability. That in itself has great value, but what it also does is it can position us to make the shift from building information silos to building shareable service components. The technologically, it's not rocket science. It's been maturing over the past dozen years. And if we shift, it's the technical term is service-oriented architecture. So if you've got the comprehensive guidance that links to the standards, then one party can build a service component for laboratory science or for epidemiology analysis or for data access in another domain. And it can be used by anybody on the globe, around the globe, because it's built the standards. And then you start to get that synergistic growth, because as more and more organizations build shareable service components based on these standards within the context of this overall guidance, then you wind up with this rapidly growing ecosystem of shareable service components. So low-resource countries don't have to build anything. They can just, you can have, you know, build the infrastructure and then assemble the applications. Another advantage is when you're using these shareable service components, business components, is you wind up being able to dynamically assemble an application on the spot. That's you can do that today with the technology that meets exactly the requirements of the public health event you're addressing right now, pulling together the data, the analytical services, the analysis, the reporting services, the alerting services. You can do that now with portal technology and just dynamically assemble and orchestrate, kick them off, one after the other, you know, pull in data from multiple data sources, feed it through analytical processes and to alerting and reporting and GIS mapping. These are service components that can be built once and shared anywhere. So this helps position us for that. And if we don't do that, we're not only wasting the technologies, because we can do that today, but we're not positioning ourselves in public health for the agility that's going to be absolutely necessary in the next public health event, emergency event.
Any other questions? If not, I'd like to thank our panel speakers one more time. Thank you.
Thank you.